Hey, look, thanks very much, Russell, and good afternoon. Nice to see you here at the City Bible Forum this afternoon, and it's a pleasure for me to be back to give this next four-week series to you. I don't know how you've handled it when you've started a particular job. I remember my first real after-university job was as morning announcer or junior journalist at a radio station up at the country, 2MO in Gunnedah in northwest New South Wales. I always thought it was strange, the radio station in Gunnedah being called 2MO, because I would have thought the radio station in Gunnedah would be called, I don't know, 2Gun or 2GU or something. But the man who founded it, his name was Mark Oliver. And, well, why not name the radio station after yourself? Why name it after the town? Anyway, I started at this radio station. I got off the train, New Year's Day. I'd caught the train from Sydney. And I got off the train, and there was no one there to meet me. I was a young man, 20 years old. And no friends. It was the days before the internet, the days before Facebook, the days before email, the days before mobile phones, and I was alone. A couple of years later, I'd moved to Sydney, and again, new job in the newsroom at 2WS, and this time I was Christian and following God, but I walked in not knowing anyone, and again, a young man, alone, feeling very on my own as a follower of God. And I want to take our attention to the next four sessions in the City Bible Forum, to a young man who started alone, really. His name was Daniel. He lived 2,700 years ago, 700 years before Jesus. He was a character in the Bible, in the Old Testament part of the Bible, but he was a real man who did exist. He was born in Jerusalem. When he was 20, his city was invaded by the Babylonians, and he was taken captive to Babylon. And different cities have got different reputations. You think New York, you think showbiz and Broadway, you think Amsterdam, you think sex, you think Las Vegas, you think gambling, you think Melbourne, you think boring. Babylon is a city, and its reputation is anti-God. That's what you'd... it's been mentioned before in the Bible as a city. It is the site of the Tower of Babel. And the Tower of Babel, that's a photo, not that I took of the Tower of Babel, that got knocked down by God, but I was in Iraq. My uncle was Australia's ambassador to Iraq, and I went to visit him. This is before the current war. In fact, it was before the last time Iraq was at war in 1991, and it was just a bit before that, after the war with Iran finished. So it was that three-year gap of peace. And I went to visit, and my uncle was driving me out to Babylon, and we stopped to look at this tower, like the Tower of Babel might have been. But that tower symbolised, the Tower of Babel, it symbolised the idea of humanity uniting to rebel against God. And that really was the idea behind the city of Babylon. It was a city that stood for opposition to God, and where somebody who wanted to live an upright life could face opposition. And that's why these four sessions in the City Bible Forum are going to be really helpful for us, because Daniel's a man living, following God. And he's living in a world where God is not feared, where God is not respected, where God is in fact opposed. And how should Daniel live? Should he kind of separate himself off from the world and try and set up a community, a ghetto, or should he become totally involved in the world of Babylon, and when in Babylon, do what the Babylonians do? And where in the continuum is the best place to be? And I'm making an assumption here that you're someone who does want to follow God, to walk with him, and somebody who's actually trying to choose how much to be part of the office culture or how much not to be. And you say, hang on, Dominic, I'm not following God. I'm just kind of here at the City Bible Forum checking things out and kicking the tires, if you like, in terms of the whole question of relationship with God. And, I mean, if that is you, and each week at City Bible Forum, we have about a third of our people here each week who are just kind of checking things out. And I want to say you're really welcome. It's really great that you could be here. And that's a key question for anybody who's exploring relationship with God, is how might it play out? What would it look like to follow Jesus? How does it play out? And how does it play out in terms of how I relate to the others in the office, to the corporate world? That's what we're exploring these next 4 weeks. I'm opening up Daniel chapter 1. And just to give us a bit of context on the handout sheet there, sentence 1 of Daniel 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. So Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, he's come to Judah, to Jerusalem, and the type of warfare that Nebuchadnezzar is using here has all the moral problems of modern nuclear war. The standard method of the Babylonians was to lay siege to the city. And if you lay siege to the city, you're stopping supplies going in or out. And what you do is you starve the people who live in the city. And the weakest people die first until so many are dead they can no longer defend the city. And so what happens is 587 BC, sentence 2 happens. The Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hands, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylon and put them in the treasure house of his God. So many Israelites are dead that the Babylonians could take over Jerusalem. And I just want you to think for a moment how devastating that would have been for the people of Israel. God's people taken out of Israel to Babylon. And the Babylonians go in and smash up the temple of the true and living God, plunder the items from the temple of God. Most Christians rightly understand the great event of Old Testament times in Israel's history was the Exodus, the story. And really, we did this the first term of City Bible Forum. We saw God rescuing his people out of Egypt, and they were in slavery in Egypt, and then he gave them the Ten Commandments, and he said, I've rescued you, now follow me. And they walked with him all the way to the Promised Land. And my last session here a month or so ago, we just arrived in the Promised Land, and it's the land flowing with milk and honey, and I will be your God, and you will be my people. And he's in relationship with his people. And what we're seeing here, if you like, we've gone from the Exodus to the exile. They are thrown out of the Promised Land. It's the undoing of the great event of saving them. But when the Babylonians invaded Jerusalem, and the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God, carried off to the temple of his God in Babylon, the land's gone. The covenant, I will be your God, you will be my people, it's gone. And you could, the temple lost, the people destroyed, God's king defeated, there's no king in Jerusalem anymore. Two ways to read it. First, you could come to the devastating conclusion that either Yahweh, God, is less powerful than the gods of Babylon, or Yahweh was not able to save his people, or Yahweh did not want to save his people. Yahweh was through with his people. Which one is it? We see sentence 2. The Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, into the king of Babylon. It wasn't that Yahweh tried to save the Israelites and failed. It was that Yahweh chose not to save the Israelites. They have been so disobedient, so taking him for granted, that he chose to send them to time out, chose to send them to their bedroom for 70 years in Babylon. And so we start Daniel 1 in anti-God Babylon, and it's the mood, it's the vibe of so many of the places that we work, whether you're working at Price Waterhouse or Telstra or the Stock Exchange floor, it's anti-God. And the king of Babylon wants to teach the young Israelites his culture. And so he wants to assimilate, to mix, to indoctrinate the people of Israel with Babylonian culture, to turn them into people who think like little Babylonians. And when their loyalty has turned over to Babylon, he can send them back to Jerusalem to educate their people and teach them to be little Babylonians. And he can build a united humanity to rebel against God. And 4 stages to his assimilation plan. And the first one is select the cream. Verse 3, the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of the court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men. He takes young men, he takes youths. Among these young men is Daniel. I take it we're talking somebody between 20 and 30. And our experience is quite tame compared to being a young man in a country run by a cruel and heartless king, a man who's a king who's just destroyed your family, who's taken your land, who's taken your city, who's destroyed your God's temple. These young men, they had to be good-looking, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, qualified to serve in the king's palace. Good-looking, clever, handsome, and Daniel and his couple of friends are the bright, clever uni students and set to be indoctrinated with the Babylonian culture and stage two, assimilation. He's to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians, verse 4. The language and the literature, it's magic, it's sorcery, it's occult, it's astrology. I mean, it's like a Christian going and becoming an apprentice in the Scientology church or going to go and learn from the Dalai Lama. Very difficult for a young Jew to sit there and be learning sorcery and magic. And stage three is to be given a new name. So 7, the chief official gave them new names, to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, to Azariah, Abednego. Now, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they're Jewish names, named after the God of Israel. With that, I mean, and that's the way many names in Western culture are. Dominic means Domos, Lord in Latin, Inik, child of the Lord. I mean, we looked around, get a couple of people to... Peter, what's Peter mean? Rock. Somebody else help me with it. What's the name? Somebody call out their name and, yeah. Don't, not yours, Deepak. Sorry? And that's John, is it? Yeah. I mean, there's lots of us. In Western culture, the name relates to God. And for a Jew to have a new name like Belteshazzar, and you see that these new names are named after the god of Babylon. And it's like Isabel, a daughter of Baal. I mean, that's not a good name for a Christian. Daniel, he rolls. I won't go anymore. Fourth stage, he draws the line. And so it's the stage of getting the young Jews to eat the rich food from the king's table. So 5, the king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years and after that enter the king's service. So 3-year training period of eating the king's food. And it's not just that he pays for their food. They sit at his table and eat the royal food and wine that he eats. It's to be totally allegiant, to be totally dependent on him. And Daniel says, I'll cop this and I'll cop that and I'll cop this and I won't cop that. At some point he says, this far no more. So sentence 8, Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. We can't miss the significance of what's happening here. This is a young man, early 20s, strange land, long way from home, standing against the king of Babylon who's invaded his country, destroyed his family, destroyed his home, and destroyed the temple of his God. Now, but what is beautiful about this is Daniel doesn't fudge the reason. Sometimes Christian person can not want to do something and they not want to do it because of God, and they fudge and they fudge about it. Look at this. Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself this way. I mean, could he have used another word other than defile when he was having the conversation? I mean, he's polite, he's submissive, he goes and asks for permission. But he's not subtle. He's very clear. He's not saying, look, I just don't like caviar. It's bad for my stomach. I'm lactose intolerant. That's not the argument he puts. I just want to spend a couple of minutes thinking about where Daniel drew this line. Because he could have chosen not to be involved in their culture at all. He could have chosen to refuse the Babylonian name Belteshazzar. He could have refused every command. He could have refused all involvement. And you presume he would have been executed quickly. Or he could have gone the whole way and become totally involved in Babylonian culture. Why did he accept the new name? Why did he accept learning the tarot cards, the occults? Why did he accept all that but draw a line on the food? I mean, there's a spectrum of different views within Christianity on how involved the Christian should be in society. And so there are some people who send their kids to Christian high schools and Christian universities, and they work for Christian organisations, and they only have Christian friends and Christian cats and Christian dogs and Christian cars and Christian carpets and Christian washing machines. And the end point of their argument is what they want to do is they want all the Christians to put their money together and buy Christian Tasmania and sell each other Christian apples. I think it is helpful to see that that's not what Daniel's aiming to do. He goes to the Babylonian lectures, he goes to their classes, he gets involved in their culture. He doesn't try to start a Christian ghetto. He sits through the philosophy lectures. He's got nothing to fear from the occult lecturer. He worships the God who made the lecturer. And he wants to stand for God in their world, so he's got to be in their world. There's all sorts of problems with capitalism, but we need Christians in business. There's all sorts of problems in our media, but we need Christian journalists to be there. We need Christians in the most intensely Christian anti-Christian environments. Now, Daniel doesn't draw the line on the occult class, doesn't draw the name on the name change. Why is he drawing the line on food? Why not just go the whole way? Some say it's because the food's not kosher. Some say it's because the food's been offered to idols. The king's food would have been offered to an idol. The king's food would have been ritually unclean. But I don't think that's the reason, because the vegetables would have been ritually unclean as well. And you couldn't get any kosher food outside Israel, and we're outside Israel. And so it's more fundamental than that. To eat the food from Nebuchadnezzar's table is to give allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel knew that the three years of free lunches at Nebuchadnezzar's table, they're not really free. Let me show it to you from the Bible, then let me show it to you from life. He knew, sitting down, giving allegiance to the king, 3 years, he'd be owned by the king at the end. Here's a verse, chapter 11 of Daniel, verse 25. It's talking about people turning their back on the king being in war with such a large army. He'll stir up his strength and courage against the king of the south. The king of the south will wage war with a large and powerful army, but will not be able to stand because of the plots devised against him. Even those who eat from the king's provisions will try to destroy him. His army will be swept away and many will fall in battle. Even those who eat from the king's table, shocking, will rise up and try to destroy you. Because if you ate from the king's table, you're bought by him. You're on his side. It's a shocking thing that that could happen. They'd sworn allegiance to him. You eat from the king's table, you're his. Hey, we get the same idea. And it's a much more serious thing in terms of establishing that I've got allegiance to somebody if I have a meal with them, isn't it? Than to just meet with them somewhere. Where did this come out in Australian politics the last few months? Brian Burke, yeah. That Mr. Rudd had a couple of meals with former West Australian Premier Brian Burke, the hat. People said, that's not good. That's not good. And it was seen as a much more serious thing in the Australian political debate that they'd had a meal together a couple of times than if they'd just met casually or just sat down for a conversation. Because having a meal gives acceptance. And Daniel is rejecting this symbol of allegiance to Nebuchadnezzar because I want to be free to serve the God of heaven and earth. I can't give my first allegiance to you. I can't eat at your table. This defilement that Daniel fears, it's not over ritual defilement of eating the particular food. It's a defilement of who is my first allegiance to? We've got to ask at this point. We should stop and say, whose table are you eating at? Friend of my wife, senior corporate executive. She worshipped her company before coming to turn to follow God. And her company expected the earth of her, and that was pretty reasonable because they got the earth from her. And then she begins to follow Jesus, and she realized over time that she had to begin to re-educate her company about their expectations, and she had to begin to re-educate the company that Wednesday night home group Bible study, that's important to me now. And she started to indicate to the company, there are some things that I won't do every week, like miss my Wednesday night home group Bible study for your deadline. And that was shocking for the company, because the company was used to her eating from their table and being there for everything. I think we're terrified at drawing lines in our secular environments, because we really struggle to believe that God is in control. Let me show you how I think we see that God is in control here, where Daniel draws a line. Daniel goes politely, submissively to the official. Look what happens, 9. God had caused the official to show favour and sympathy to Daniel. God is in control over the official, the Babylonian official. The official's not at this point the big boss. That's Nebuchadnezzar, the king. Nebuchadnezzar is a ruthless mongrel who's murdered many of Daniel's family. The official told Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord the king, who's assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other men your age? The king would then have my head because of you. The official knew that he was responsible for Daniel. He doesn't think this is such a good idea, knowing how cruel and ruthless his boss is. Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. He doesn't back down. He's taken a non-negotiable stand. And really, that's Kath's corporate friend deciding not to work Wednesday night. I'm not going to eat at the company table from now. Look what happens, 14. He agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. And then God blesses Daniel. At the end of the 10 days, 15, they look healthier and better nourished than any of the young men who ate the royal food. Daniel's obedient. Daniel doesn't compromise, and Daniel is honoured by God. Firstly, in the simple way of God giving them good health. The blessing of good health, it's only a small sign, but more to come, 17, to these four young men. God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them in, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, so they entered the king's service. End of uni, it's oral exam. Much more scary. Friends who've done the oral exams, it's much more scary than having a written exam. And in every matter, 20, of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. The point is not so much that Daniel and his mates are intellectually superior over everyone else. The point is, 17, to these four young men, God gave knowledge and understanding. It's that God gave it to them. They honoured God and he honoured them. It's interesting, though, you come to 21. The end of chapter 20, the end of the chapter, sentence 21. Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus. He could read straight past that. Daniel went into Nebuchadnezzar's territory. Daniel went into Babylon. Daniel went to the city that is synonymous with opposition to God. Daniel went to the place where wickedness is home. Daniel went to the place where people wanting to live upright lives face opposition, just like he did. And yet it's the place where the pagan king Nebuchadnezzar died. And it's the place where the next king after him died. And the king after him died. And then in sentence 21, Daniel lived through them all. It was 70 years later that King Cyrus came and overthrew Babylon. That King Cyrus invaded Babylon, which 70 years before had been the most powerful nation in the ancient world. King Cyrus came and overthrew Babylon and said to the Israelites, Daniel and his mates, you go home. Go back to Jerusalem. Look after your city, your country. Daniel, the representative of God, young bloke, in powerful anti-God city, outmaneuvers the kingdom of Babylon. Daniel lives to see the greatest human kingdom in the world fail. Babylon, united humanity in opposition to God, fails. And the Jew from Jerusalem lives to see it happen. The setting up of the alternate rule fails. When the Israelites went back into slavery in Babylon. It wasn't that God didn't have the power to save Israel, but through this whole incident, 70 years, God was working through a man, Daniel, and honouring a man, Daniel, who had the courage to honour him. It's four sessions in Daniel, the next 4 weeks at City Bible Forum. We're going to learn, questions and comments in a moment, we're going to learn that Daniel was a man in love with God and addicted to the scriptures. We're going to see that Daniel was a man who lived honouring God, under the rule of God, life, obeying what God told him in the scriptures. He's a great model for us. And we live in an industry trying to follow God. An industry is often opposed to God. And we've got to make decisions all the time to do things. Will I be completely part of the world or be completely cut off from the world? And what will I do? Got to grab this. Two points of application. First one, importantly, different to Islam, the encouragement of the Bible is not for Christians to set up a Christian state. There's no encouragement to do that. Christians, rather, people following God, to live as strangers and aliens in the world. Nowhere in the Bible is the encouragement to set up a Christian state, even to long for a Christian state. If you've been longing for Christian Tasmania, you are longing against the plans and purposes of God. If we're to work in Nebuchadnezzar's office, we're though to work in an office that is, in the end, opposed to us. An office that at points is going to mock the followers of God. And you know what's ridiculous? We get scared of the Nebuchadnezzars in our life. And we need to remember that God has put us here deliberately, intentionally. And we're not to expect it to be easy. The bruises come when you draw a line. When you run with them, there's no bruise. When you draw a line, there's a bruise. My job at 2WS. Young man, I'd been given the job, started work on the Monday. Between the boss giving me the job and me starting, he resigned. And his farewell and last day was on the Friday at the end of my first week. On my second day, I was asked, would I contribute to paying for the stripper that was going to perform at the farewell for my boss on the Friday night? Now, I know how I'd handled it now at 42. I'd say, oh, that's a stupid idea, get a life. But young man, first week, new job, I said I wasn't going to pay to be involved in paying for the stripper. But I thought I would still go to the night and then I'd go for a walk around the block at the appropriate time in the evening and just keep walking. And walk five or six times and then come back after it was all over. And what happened was, I think I'd understood the time that she was supposed to come, and it was a room where there's 15 of us sitting around on a table, and I'd arrived and there was only one seat left and it was on the far side of the room, so I'd sat on that side of the room. And she came before I was expecting and came in, and the door was closed, and I just kind of, what? And to have got up and got around the side of the tables would have been really very awkward. And so I spent 20 minutes counting the carpet fluff. Eyes down, looking at the floor. And the following week, I mean, it was a newsroom of 14 men, one woman, and the one female journalist in our company, also a young girl my age. She came up to me the following week and said, I just wanted to say thank you, Dominic, for the way that you were different to everybody else at the table at that point. And I want to say to somebody who's following God, junior in the organisation, longing for higher position, where you think you can have more influence for God, junior employee longing to be managers, and lots of juniors think, if only I were there, what influence I could have for God. If I was in charge, I could make decisions to structure things more positively for God. But you will not make a higher position count for God unless you're living for him where you are now. And if you're unwilling to stand for him where you are now and you're just bending, you know what, you're a Babylonian. You're not a Daniel. It's going to be really good for us the next 4 weeks at City Bible Forum. I hope you'll be with us next week, and I hope you'll bring friends as we continue this journey. But questions and comments, and Russell. I'll do the easy one first. Is vegetarianism the preferred diet? In Genesis chapter 1, God gives the people all the plants to eat. But in Genesis chapter 9, he gives not just the plants to eat, but also the animals to the people to eat. So perhaps there's an argument from Genesis chapter 1 through to 8 for vegetarianism. There is no argument from Genesis 9 following for vegetarianism. However, I am for you being a vegetarian so that there is more meat for me. More seriously, I don't think you can get the argument for vegetarianism from Daniel chapter 1, because the line that's being drawn is not over vegetarianism in Daniel chapter 1. I think it's over allegiance. Normally we're told to avoid, this is people who are Christian, are told to avoid evil things such as the occult, certainly studying such things. Is it being too much of the world to study such things under the pretext of being equipped to engage better with our culture? Same derivatively application as watching certain movies, TV, reading books. I think that there certainly is an argument that we need to... let me put it this way. 1 Peter chapter 3, 1 Peter in the New Testament, he says, be in the world, but not of the world. And I think that's a very helpful line, that I'm not to be in Jerusalem only, I'm not to be in Babylon only, I'm to be in the world, but not of the world. And so I've got to understand the world. I've got to understand the things that make Australia tick. I've got to understand cricket. I've got to understand football. I've got to understand all sorts of things that make Australia... I've got to understand business. But I've got to not live for it. And so... And I think that's true at all sorts of levels. If I want to reach people who are New Age, I've got to understand the New Age. I've read the Celestine Prophecy, not to become a Celestine prophet, but to understand that worldview. And in terms of talking to people about Jesus, I spend lots of time thinking about what makes our city tick. In terms of, is something on television, a movie, a particular book, unhelpful for me? I think it's helpful for me to know what's out there, but I don't think it's helpful for me to immerse myself in some of the things. So... in my life, I have watched 2.5 minutes of Sex and the City in my life. And I don't think I need to watch any more of that program, and I don't intend ever to watch any more of that program in my life. That's a tip if you're thinking of going to the movies. I'm not going to. But I could run the same argument on a number of points. I can't see that Sex and the City will make me love my wife better. I think it will just undermine my relationship with my wife. And I just don't need to go there. But it is helpful to know, to some degree, what is on the television. I say, do watch some TV, please, as a representative of Christians in the media. Keep them employed. And so I think it is important to be part of the culture. So I think it's knowing culture, but loving God.